Every organization, no matter its scale, eventually confronts moments that don't just test its limits, but really shake things up.
Those big moments.
Yeah,
Yes.
exactly. We're not talking minor hiccups here. We mean those, seismic shifts that can threaten everything, your strategy, your market position.
Even public trust.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So this deep dive is all about navigating these high-stakes scenarios. We're looking at two really crucial strategies: crisis management and contingency planning.
Often confused, those
And that's
two.
very often. Our
Well,
sources show that whether it's global disruptions, internal failures, or natural disasters, understanding the difference is key.
and not just the difference, but what makes them work,
Right.
their impacts.
Exactly. How do you stay resilient? What does being prepared really mean? And how do you act when the unthinkable happens? Okay, let's unpack this.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Our sources really stress that while, yeah, people use them interchangeably, the core approaches are fundamentally different.
And getting that distinction isn't just about words.
No, not at all. It's strategic. It's the difference between, reacting in chaos versus having the foresight to maybe soften the blow or even avoid it.
That's the tension. So let's start with the one that feels more immediate, maybe more visceral: crisis management. When we talk crisis management, our sources are clear. It's reactive. It's the response after the crisis
My
hits.
fire is already burning.
Right. You're trying to contain the blaze, save what you can, often while it's still, raging. What are some characteristics of a crisis beyond just being unexpected? Because I think for our listeners, unexpected is almost a given.
That's a good point. Beyond the shock factor, the sources highlight intense pressure, a real lack of solid
An
information.
information vacuum.
Exactly. And often a direct threat to the business's existence or its reputation. It's not just operational,
Yeah.
it can feel existential.
Right.
And decision-making changes dramatically. The research suggests the sheer speed needed, plus that murky information, it often pushes leadership towards being very centralized.
Almost autocratic sometimes.
Sometimes, yes, out of necessity. There's just no time for long debates when every second potentially costs you capital or goodwill.
So the main goal isn't just limiting damage.
No, it's more urgent. It's about rapidly restoring some kind of stability, preventing that long-term, maybe irreversible harm. Think about a big product recall or a massive IT system crash, that immediate scramble.
Okay. So if that's the reactive in-the-moment response, how does contingency planning contrast with that? What's its role?
Contingency planning is, well, it's basically the polar opposite. It's proactive, deeply proactive.
Before anything happens.
Precisely. Instead of waiting for the disaster, you're meticulously anticipating potential risks and then building detailed step-by-step action plans before anything occurs.
The what-if approach.
Exactly. It's built on asking those what-if questions. What if our main supplier suddenly goes under? What if our server farm gets hit by a flood? What if there's a major reputational hit?
So it covers a lot of ground: natural disasters, supply chains, IT, reputation.
Yeah, a whole range. And its power really comes through when threats, well, maybe you don't know when they'll hit, but they're at least somewhat foreseeable, quantifiable.
Things you can sort of get your arms around potentially.
Right. If there's even a chance of some advance warning, or if the organization just wants to minimize that feeling of uncertainty, contingency planning is invaluable.
It gives you a roadmap.
It gives you a blueprint, exactly. It can turn potential panic into, okay, purposeful action.
Yeah.
And that really boosts resilience before the storm.
So let me try to boil this down. Crisis management: reactive, tactical, after the event. Contingency planning: proactive, strategic, before the event.
That's the core distinction, yes.
But I can imagine situations where those lines might blur a bit in practice. Could a company maybe rely too heavily on its plans, think they've got it all covered, and then just freeze when the real crisis hits differently?
Oh, that's a critical point. And our sources do touch on that relationship. It's not just about timing. A strong contingency plan should absolutely inform and speed up your crisis management.
It feeds into it.
Exactly. But you're right, over-reliance is the danger. Blind faith in the plan. The ideal isn't to confuse them, but to have the planning create a flexible framework for the crisis response.
Yeah.
You need the foresight and the agility.
Okay, perfect. So, distinction established. Now, let's zoom back in on that reactive side, the crisis management itself. When you're actually in the storm, just reacting isn't enough, is it?
Not by a long shot.
What really separates an effective response from just, well, chaos? This is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, this is absolutely where the rubber meets the road. Success here isn't just having a plan B or C on a shelf. Our research points to several critical factors for effective execution. Let's call them pillars, maybe four key ones.
Okay.
The first is transparency. Now, on the surface, that sounds simple, right? Be open, be honest. But the sources unpack a strategic dilemma. Real transparency isn't just blurting everything out immediately. It's about strategically managing the flow of difficult information. Well, it's balancing what stakeholders need to know right now to maintain trust versus information that might be misconstrued or legally problematic while things are still unfolding.
Ah, okay. That's nuanced.
Very. Think about Volkswagen back in 2015 with the emissions scandal, their initial denials. That caused way more damage reputationally and financially than if they'd perhaps faced the music sooner.
Even though facing the music would have been painful too.
Oh, absolutely painful. But the lesson seems to be that delaying or denying often just lets stakeholders fill that information void with their own narratives. And those are usually worse.
Right. And that leads directly into the next pillar, doesn't it? Communication. It's not just being transparent, but how you communicate that transparency.
Exactly. Tied at the hip. Our sources hammer this home. Clear, concise, timely communication is non-negotiable.
And who are those key stakeholders you absolutely have to reach?
Well, this is pretty long. Employees, definitely. Customers, suppliers, shareholders, regulators, emergency services, the media. You can't afford to leave any of them in the dark.
Because poor communication isn't just confusing.
It breeds misinformation. It breeds panic. It can actually make the crisis itself worse. A good crisis comms plan isn't just about having a press release template ready.
No.
No, it's DEPA. It's understanding how the media works, engaging proactively to shape the narrative if possible, and crucially, having internal strategies to keep your own team informed and reassured.
Like with the data breach example.
Perfect example. Yeah. You have to immediately tell customers, regulators, the media what happened, what data was involved, and critically, what steps you're taking right now. Silence. Delays. That erodes trust incredibly quickly.
Okay, I see how transparency and communication then feed into the third pillar you mentioned. Right. Speed. Yeah. Time operates differently in a crisis.
It really does. Speed is absolutely paramount. Our sources highlight this again and again. Every second counts.
And delays aren't just inconvenient.
No, they let the impact spiral. And crucially, you lose control of the narrative.
Okay.
Competitors, regulators, the media, they'll define the story for you if you're too slow.
And this is where having that contingency plan helps again.
Massively. If you have a well-developed contingency plan, roles are clear, procedures are defined, that significantly boosts your speed. Quick action limits financial loss, protects customers, prevents that lasting reputational stain.
Okay, transparency, communication, speed, and the fourth pillar, control. When everything is going sideways, what does control look like, especially for leaders?
Yeah, control. Crises are the ultimate leadership test, aren't they?
Mm.
Maintaining control isn't about, you know, micromanaging every little detail.
Yeah.
It's about decisive leadership through the chaos. Our sources emphasize strong leaders stay calm or appear calm under immense pressure. They make quick, effective decisions, often with incomplete information.
That takes nerve.
It does. It also means coordinating everyone, making sure stakeholders know their roles, which might be changing rapidly, and crucially, ensuring you have immediate access to funds, cash, or emergency credit lines to pay for the immediate response.
So that visible control reassures people.
Exactly. It reassures stakeholders. Internally and externally, it minimizes that uncertainty and stops the whole thing from feeling completely overwhelming.
Okay, so crisis management, while reactive, is clearly this intense, strategic, high-pressure dance. Let's swing back now to the other side, contingency planning.
The proactive side.
Right. The benefits seem obvious. Being prepared is good. But what are the real impacts? The wins, sure, but also the potential downsides, the trade-offs. Investing all this effort in stuff that might never happen, I imagine that's a tough sell sometimes internally.
It absolutely is. And this brings up a really important question. Our sources explore this sort of double-edged sword aspect of contingency planning.
Mm-hmm.
The benefits are compelling, no doubt. But the costs, the potential drawbacks, they're real too.
Mm.
And its effectiveness really hinges on having accurate risk assessments and keeping them updated constantly, which takes work.
So let's break down the benefits first. What are the strong arguments for it?
Okay, benefits. First, pretty obviously, cost reduction. Planning ahead can seriously reduce financial losses during a crisis. Think about minimizing reputational damage costs, lawsuits, operational downtime.
So it saves money in the long run, potentially.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Second, time. It takes time to plan, absolutely. But having those procedures ready saves critical time during the crisis. Less indecision, less paralysis.
Makes sense.
Third, it fundamentally reduces risk. Plans cut through the fog of uncertainty. They let companies prepare for different scenarios, reduce panic, like we said.
That's the fourth benefit.
Safety, often overlooked but crucial. Good contingency planning makes the workplace safer. Staff know how to react in emergencies. That protects people, and it protects morale, too.
Those are strong points. But you mentioned a strategic cost, the drawbacks. What are the risks of investing so heavily in these what-ifs?
Yeah, the drawbacks need equal attention. First, the big one, cost and time investment. It takes real money and real people hours to develop good plans.
Opportunity cost.
Yeah, exactly. Those resources could have gone into R&D, marketing, expansion. And there's a psychological aspect, too. If the crisis you planned for never happens, that investment can feel, well, wasted, even though it provided invisible protection.
Right. You don't see the disaster that didn't happen because you were ready.
Precisely. Then there's the inherent risk that the plan just might not fit the actual crisis. You can't predict everything.
The unknown unknowns.
Right. So your meticulous plan might be useless or even counterproductive if the reality is wildly different from your scenario. And our sources also warn about overconfidence.
Like we touched on earlier, believing the plan is foolproof.
Yeah. It can make an organization rigid, less flexible, less able to adapt when something truly unexpected occurs. Ironically, the plan could hinder agility.
Wow. Okay. So the planning itself needs to be agile. And what about the safety drawbacks?
Well, the safety benefit relies entirely on the risk assessments being accurate and up to date. If those assessments are flawed or old, the plan based on them is flawed.
So following the plan could actually put people in danger.
It could, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
It might give a false sense of security. Employees follow procedures, but those procedures don't match the real threat. That leads to a breakdown of trust, potentially greater harm.
Mm.
It has to be a living process, constantly reviewed and updated, not just a binder on a shelf.
Okay, so we've looked at the immediate reactions of crisis management and the forward-looking preparation of contingency planning. What's crystal clear, I think, is that the most resilient organizations don't just pick one.
No, absolutely not.
They understand these aren't opposites, but two sides of the same coin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two critical, interconnected parts of being strategically resilient.
Mm-hmm. They react well because they've thought ahead and they keep learning.
So thinking about our listeners, what does this all mean for you as you consider your own organization's ability to handle shocks?
Well, it really brings up a tough practical question for anyone in leadership, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Considering the very real investment, the money, the time, the sheer effort needed for good contingency planning, how do you truly measure the ROI on that? Especially when the specific crisis you meticulously prepare for might never actually happen. Or maybe a completely different unforeseen one pops up instead.
That's a great question to leave people with.
It forces you to grapple with the often invisible value of preventing things, of mitigating risks you can't always see, in a world where, let's face it, uncertainty seems to be the only constant.